Next case is Elizabeth Abbott and Andrew Ferriazzi, 350 North Rumson Avenue, Block 619, Lot 11, in the S40 District, to grant a C variance for two side yard setbacks, combined side yard, lot width, lot area, and possibly others.
I've looked into potential conflicts. The owner of the property is an LLC. One of the members of the LLC is the city solicitor, Scott Abbott. His daughter and his son-in-law are the applicants making an application tonight. To me, that's not, there's no per se conflicts.
I know you're dead tired and you'd love to get out of here.
Please state your name.
Just your name, address.
My name is Mary Forbes. I live at 427 North Rumson Avenue.
Ms. Forbes, do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about
to give? Oh, I'm so sorry. What do you want me to?
You swear to tell the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now you may speak.
All right. I'm 92 years old, and I graduated from Margate Granville Avenue School in 1940. So I have made Margate my home since then. Oh, gee. I'm going to say it. Mr. Abbott knows all the rules and regulations. And I'm sure I stop shaking now. Okay, and he knows all the rules and regulations. And I'm sure he can make the right changes here, there, left, right, up, down, over the water, wherever. But it's still a small lot. And my garage driveway is larger than that house. I don't know.
There's really no hardship. The buyers bought the house, bought the lot. They knew what they bought because of the 79 case. If they didn't know, they should have known because they were connected as the city solicitor, for God's sake. So they buy the lot, they pay $75,000 for it. Now they want $600,000 for it. We offered over $200,000 for it, plus she's going to fix the bulkhead, and that's a hardship? Where's the hardship? You know, it's ludicrous.
Margie Real, 6 North Mansfield Avenue. I did go take a ride by, actually I walked by the property, as I'm sure most, if not all of you, have done. And that property to me looks like an oversized driveway. The owner knew when he purchased the property that it was not buildable.
My name is Jeannie McEwen. In Northfield, you couldn't even put a shed on that lot. That's all I want to say.
I had a picture on my phone from across the bay looking here. I had it blown up, but it doesn't do it justice because it's cropped and you can't see the neighborhood. But I want to just double clarify with our attorney that, or it's been determined it's not a buildable lot. It can only be built on with a variance. As Roger stated, it's grossly understated. They need 4,000, they only have 3,000. But of that 3,000, 1,905 or 2,000, I guess, with the new figures, is actually visible. We have a lot of undersized lots that we've granted variance to build, but they're always in an area of undersized lots. They always fit in with the character of the neighborhood.
Is this a speech?
This is my opinion. This is my comments on the case.
This lot is
surrounded by 50-foot lots. The neighbors bought their property knowing there was an unbuildable lot. The applicant bought the lot knowing it was unbuildable. There's value to the neighbors in having next to them, and the neighbors are the ones suffering a hardship here. This is the epitome of a case where if you look at the rules we are to follow as the balancing the positives and negatives, there's no question. I don't see the benefit to the community. Preserving the existing integrity of the neighborhood is important here.
The applicant does not have any hardship. The owner bought this property for $75,000 and a dollar, including his first half of his purchase. The applicants can't demonstrate the undue element of the positive criteria here because the owner, the actual owner of the property, rejected a written offer from an adjoining owner to purchase the undersized lot for fair market value. The Dahlmeyer case that Mr. Balanton cited from earlier makes it clear if the owner of the undersized lot refuses to sell the property at a fair and reasonable price, then the owner might not suffer an undue hardship. And we're talking about established case law here. So, and as Ms. Land stated, we're not just talking about appraised values. It's not just fair market value. How do we value it? With variances, without variance. Without variances, the board can also consider the fact that a fair and reasonable price for this property, considering what the actual owner paid for it just several years ago, $200,000 is pretty fair and reasonable considering this owner only paid $75,000 and a dollar for the property. Finally, as Mr. Rehnkamp indicated, the property does have an improvement on it. There is a use. It's stated in my letter, which is marked as O1 already. It's been stated on the record. The property already has a dock. It's been used to dock boats there. It's been presumably the owner charges people some amount of money to put their boats there. So denial of a variance for a single-family dwelling on this property would not be confiscatory, as noted in the Dahlmeier case, because the property already has an established use. It's not going to be zoned into total inutility if this board decides to deny variances requested for this grossly undersized property. I don't want to take up any more of the board's time. You have my letter. You have the appraisals I'll give to Ms. Casey. You have the testimony. You've heard from the neighboring property owners themselves to the immediate left and the right. You may hear from others here from the public tonight about the detrimental impacts to them, to the public good, based on their comments. And you've heard about the detriment to your zone plan from Mr. Rankamp as a professional planner. Before I conclude, I just want to ask one more thing of the applicant, and that is I really would like to find out exactly how they removed all these variances from their plans, because these plans were not on file as of 10 days ago when the notice was given. These plans have just recently been amended and submitted. We've run through a number of ways that the application has supposedly changed. I'm not aware of them because it wasn't on file with the application as of 10 days ago. All I have is Mr. McLaurin's letter reviewing the application that was on file, listing no fewer than 7 variances that were needed. And I heard multiple times from the applicant's professional planner that the only variance we need is the one for the distance between principal dwellings. And we have repeatedly glossed over in his testimony the variances that are needed, the main variances that are needed, as Mr. Abel noted quite aptly, are the undersized lot and the undersized lot width. Those are really the main variances. So to keep repeating that this is a conforming application, but for this distance between principal buildings, is simply misleading.
As I said, I live in 352 North Rumson Avenue, right next to the property in question tonight. At the time I bought my home, I had been assured, and this was after the LLC that currently owns the property had already purchased it, I had been assured that this was a non-buildable lot, that it was far smaller than would be required to, that would be permitted to build a lot here, a home on a lot here, and that I would never have to worry about what we're talking about tonight. The lot in question tonight simply is not big enough to build a home on, okay? It's 30 feet wide, okay? You require, according to the master plan, 50 feet. And the owners of this house, when they bought it, whether it was in 1977 or 1997, bought it knowing full well this was a non-buildable lot. And their purchase price that they paid for it reflects that. And in fact, it was just sold 3 years ago from one 50% owner. I understand now the city attorney owns 100% of this LLC. And that sale was transpired on the public record for $75,000. But I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the bulkhead there. It's failed. When I first bought my home, okay, 10 years ago, I couldn't get Ponzio to sign off on the survey for the waterfront. So I negotiated a reduction in my purchase price to allow me to build a new bulkhead, as did the prior owner on the other side in 348. We both redid our bulkheads, and we went to the owner of this LLC, and we said, would you like to come in? We're all going to do the bulkhead together. Let's fix this bulkhead. But that was not done. He wasn't interested in participating. I know how much it's going to cost to fix this bulkhead. So
Can I ask you a question, Rick?
Sure.
Is one of the neighbors trying to buy this property, or are both
me.
Of you trying to buy
Just
it and split
me.
It? Just you?
Just me.
Okay.
Okay. And I know that I will have to pay to rebuild this failed bulkhead. It was failed 10 years ago. I know when I got flooded by Sandy, this was partially the reason. And so, and the appraisal that we've provided you with at the 275, based on the extraordinary assumption that you grant these variances, states that there's a failed bulkhead and it needs replacement. And again, that's the discount. That's why I'm not charging, that's why I'm not offering the full 275, because these repairs need to be made for this to be habitable. But there's more to this application than just, am I going to pay to protect my property? I shouldn't have to pay to protect my property. The owners know the city's ordinances better than me, and probably better than most people who live in this city. And they can't go in there, eyes wide open, paying, you know, a very low price to purchase it, and all of a sudden put it on me that I either have to pay up or shut up and let them cram a little house into this lot. It's just not fair, and it's just not right, okay? And think about, if you were living on that street, think about the wind and the light and the air that are going to be reduced. This is going to be a tall, skinny little building that's going to be shoved onto what's no more than a driveway, okay, in our beautiful neighborhood. And the distance between the homes, the things that that Mr. Balanton is trying to get us to ignore, the fact that a variance is needed. But I don't want to ignore that, and I don't think that we have to ignore that. The home that was rebuilt 2 years ago, two homes down from mine, was rebuilt. This was a family home that had been on that property for decades, and it was leaning into the bay. And so they invested money in rebuilding their home. And this board granted them the variances to do that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there's something different to coming on to using to buying a property, using it, operating as a marina, no doubt for profit, okay, and then all of a sudden deciding, you know what, I want to build a home here instead. What I'll just ask you in sum is to please protect my home, protect my investment, and my investment in this city.
Mr. Rankin, would you give the board your professional opinion regarding this variance application?
The threshold issue that's before you is whether it would be reasonable for this board to find that there's a hardship that this application is based on. And I'm going to specifically leave aside the issue of the conflicting valuations going back and forth. Leave that aside as a legal issue. It's been suggested to you that that's the only issue in determining whether it's a hardship. And I would suggest to you that that's the only issue when you're dealing with a vacant lot coming before a board for the very first time. Those are the cases that have been dealt with by the courts in which the appraisals essentially determine whether or not there's a hardship. Here, I think there are five facts which are different from the cases that went before the Supreme Court. Excuse me, some sinus issues. The first is obviously the 1979 denial. And I'm not suggesting this from a res judicata point of view, but clearly there is notice for a land purchaser that there's been a prior determination that this lot is not a developable lot as a starting point. The second issue is that the lot, when you go and visit it, is in fact improved. There is a driveway that's improved on the lot. There are docks at the bulkhead. So there's currently use occurring on this property. You have a private parking space and a dock, and that obviously has value here on the New Jersey shore. Now, under your ordinances, at 175-33A sub I, no accessory uses are permitted on a lot unless a principal building is there. So presumably at some point in the past, there's a D variance that's been granted by this community to allow those improvements to occur, and that would have resolved the hardship. even if it turns out that that D variance was never asked for, these are essentially pirate improvements that just happened on the lot and were never approved by the community, it's still an improvement on the lot. The hardship has been resolved because this is not a vacant lot. This is a lot which has been put to a productive use. And why I say this has been recognized whether or not there's a D variance or not is that the property records of this community show that there is an assessed value not just for land but also for improvements on this lot. This community, through its taxation, views this as an improved lot. And your master plan in 2016 did a very thorough analysis for other reasons as to which lots in your community were vacant. This is mapped as a not vacant lot. So I think that's a very substantial fact. This community has recognized that there are improvements on this lot, and those improvements do, in fact, have value. So in terms of hardship, this is not in utility, as has been suggested to you. There is a use on the lot, and now the question is that a reasonable use? Well, we know from Gardner versus Pinelands that beekeeping was determined to be a reasonable use in a rural situation. Here on the shore, having a private dock and a private parking space is, in fact, a valuable use. And it's been assessed for that activity here in the community. So I would suggest to you that talking about this as a vacant lot and that the appraisals are the only thing that matters is simply not true given the specific facts in this situation. So then we turn to the negative criteria. And here I think both your master plan and ordinances have set a threshold for architectural development, and I'm sure you've dealt with these standards in the past in many applications. On page 12 of the master plan, the land use policy 3.2a sub I, the objective is to continue to plan and zone to preserve the character and appeal of existing neighborhoods. That's followed at 3.2g sub I, where the architectural design standards to promote a desirable visual environment and ensure the continued visual integrity of the existing neighborhoods in your community. These policies are then implemented in your zoning ordinance in sections from which variances have not been identified at 175-25 in general design. At B3 and B4, we have the requirement that it shall relate to the rhythm established in the adjacent buildings. and it would strengthen the particular design feature of the locale. Obviously, this is going to be the only very odd, very much smaller, very much narrower building. You can do all you want to make the windows and porches look like everybody else's windows and porches, but there's no question this is going to stand out like a sore thumb. This is going to be the only building like it in a neighborhood that has a very established character, which I would suggest to you is contrary to the intent of the zone plan. That's not what's supposed to happen in this context. I think it's very important that your governing body adopted a specific ordinance that said, we understand there are undersized lots out there, but 40 feet width is our threshold. Come down to 40, it's okay, you don't need a variance, go ahead and process it. But below 40, that's special. And here I think not only going below 40, but coming all the way down to 30, with a history of it already having been determined not to be a buildable lot, and as an improved lot with improvements on it that have value, it's not appropriate to simply say this is consistent with the architectural character of this community. Excuse me. Now, a couple of suggestions were made as to why this advances the criteria within the municipal land use law from a positive perspective, and one was improving the bulkhead. It's a very important principle in planning that failing to undertake basic property maintenance is not a way to bootstrap your way into a variance. I can't let my property run down and say, look, I'm going to build it back up again as an excuse for you to give me relief. It's my obligation to maintain my property in a reasonable fashion. So repairing the bulkhead is not the basis for a variance. That's what you're supposed to do anyway as an owner of property. It was said repeatedly that if a neighbor buys the house, there's this theoretical expansion that could occur. I think that was very clever. I give my colleague high marks for cleverness. But it's a very stretched, very strange analogy. Essentially, you have a vacant lot, an empty lot into which structures are going to go under this application. Clearly, you're reducing the open space and light and air and all of the other things in this neighborhood. And it doesn't require creating some sort of very convoluted theory as to what might happen in the alternative to try and justify it. So I would suggest to you that there are, in fact, negative impacts on the neighborhood. It's not consistent with the intent and purpose of this particular zoning district or the master plan. Excuse me. And it's not a vacant lot. So for those reasons, I would suggest to you that there is no basis under appropriate planning theory for a variance to be granted for this application. Thank you.
Tom Collins.
Very, very tough case over a very small piece of land. I sat here listening to a lot of testimony. I heard a lot of spin put on things. I heard a lot of facts put into testimony that really weren't facts but were innuendo. And some of it was in Mr. Patterson's comments, which I disagreed with. We don't know what people thought or what they did or what they knew when they bought things, except for what the testimony is. As far as this variance, based upon the testimony that I find factual, and that's my opinion, is that back in 1914, per a factual map, this city created a 30-foot lot down that whole stretch, which caused this hardship. I don't see, just because that house wasn't developed or consumed by another lot over that time, that we are in a position to now deny a landowner the right to build on his own land, considering the fact that they've eliminated all their variances except for the lot width, lot size, and the distance of the one house, which we are eliminating in the very near future anyway. It's before the commission. So I just don't have a basis. Fair market value, I don't know what fair market value is on the bay, but I would think it's much greater than 275 with docks, and there's just no, we're losing our bayfront. So there's the less we have available for sale, the more everything becomes worth. It's just supply and demand. I just don't see any basis where I could turn this down, so I vote in favor.
Rich Patterson.
I think it comes down to our job is to enforce the intent of the master plan. I think the planner in his statements said it much better than I could. We are not keeping with the integrity of this neighborhood. This is not 1914. So much has changed since then. As Mrs. Forbes testified, nothing was developed until late 40s, early 50s in this area. So it has developed into a area of large houses, large lots, a lot of air. This doesn't fit in there. It fits in other parts of the town. We've approved it in other parts of the town. It is an aberration in this part of town. That is the master plan that we have to consider. I don't see a hardship. When you buy a piece of property, it's your responsibility to know if there's liens on it, easements, if there's anything on that property. So yes, I have to say that the property owners knew this was an unbuildable lot when they bought it. The hardships they talked about, I don't believe are hardships. And I believe the hardships are going to the neighbors, and any hardships they have are self-imposed or self-created. We're not stopping someone from rebuilding a house that they had. It's a lot that's existed that way for many, many years. They can still operate it as a marina. They can sell it to their neighbors. They have things they can do with a lot and not be harmed. I look at our job here also as protecting neighbors, not just we're protecting property. We're not there to help the applicant, to hurt the applicant. We are there to protect the neighbors, and I feel my no vote now is protecting the neighbors and the neighborhood.
Mike Cristaldi.
Oh boy, this is probably one of the toughest ones. This has been a tough one. 1933, when they did the lots, people were building cottages, just a little fishing cottage. They drove one Model T so you could build an 8-foot garage, and these lots worked. They're throwing Tom Dugan's lot in down the street. Tom Dugan's house was destroyed in the storm, so we can't just say, okay, you can't rebuild. It was a house. 1979, this was turned down. Why was it turned down in 79 and we should change that now? I don't understand that part of it. As far as light and air on the two neighbors, it's really, really not good. I think we need to protect the neighbors a little bit more than we've been doing. I vote no.
Craig Pomisano.
Mike said everything I was going to say. I'm going to say it again. It's 1,000 foot short. There are 50-foot lots up and down the street and larger. Some of the houses are 2 and 3 lots put together. It is the Bayfront District. They were offered money for the property. They did not take it. I don't know what the actual worth of the property should be. I don't know. The house down the street was destroyed by Sandy. It was a 32-foot lot. We let them put the house back. This didn't have a house on it ever. It's just 30 feet from 50 feet. It's just too much to give. I respect the neighbors, their rights, and the light and the air. We're talking about a 19-foot wide house by 43 foot tall by 40 foot deep. It's just doesn't fit in the neighborhood. They were turned down before for the variance. And like Roger had said, it's a grossly undersized lot. And I can't see the hardship knowing that what they had when they bought the property. So I have to vote no.
Despina Hess.
I'm going to have to join. I agree with the reasoning put forth by Mr. Cristaldi. I did not find a hardship. I'm relying upon the expert opinion and the testimony that was presented today as to offers for purchase and everything else that was presented, so I did not find a hardship. Moving on, I'm weighing the factors and just preserving our duty to carry out the master plan, which one of the neighbors reminded us of. I don't believe the master plan wants lots. I don't believe the master plan does not want lots under 50 in this zone. It tells us that. It tells us maybe 40, but definitely not 30. So going in line with what the master plan intended, and given the negative, or excuse me, the detrimental impact to the neighborhood and the neighbor opposition, I'm voting not in favor of the application.
Ron Grupo.
Thank you. I agree that the hardship is, there's more of hardship being placed on the neighbors than on the owner of the lot. I empathize with the young getting their family started and wanting to live in this area, but the lot is too small, and the master plan is called the master plan because we have to have some sort of guidance on what we can do, and we can do things within reason. This, to me, is grossly undersized and would have a negative impact on the neighbors, and part of our responsibility is to look out for the common good and to make sure that things are conforming to master code, which I don't feel that this one is even close. And as far as the value, I'm certainly hopeful that something can be worked out what the value is, but the value of something, which I've learned over 7 years on this earth, is what somebody's willing to pay for it. So hopefully, you know, there's some recourse or some relief for the owners of the property, but I'm going to have to vote no.
Mike Richman.
The minimum lot area is 4,000 square feet. They're asking for 3,000 square feet. That's a 1,000 square foot difference on a 30-foot lot. The minimum width is 50 feet. They're asking for 30 feet. That's a 20-foot difference on the 30-foot lot. I was involved in the original master plan probably about 20 years ago. So we made that master plan so that things like this wouldn't happen. And it's not going to happen. I'm going to vote no.
Application fails 1-6.
Not done.